Hey, the kid is back from hiatus. Welcome to the latest and hopefully the greatest episode of the Life 2.0 podcast. Let's get to it. Good to be back with you again, wherever you're listening in this big wide world of ours. I hope that this finds you well and that you are enduring all the chaos and challenges that humans seem to want to stir up on an ongoing basis. Maybe it's just to see what we really can prove sometimes, I think, and other times I think it's just because we're stupid. But there's a lot of us and we tend to cause a lot of chaos. And there's an old saying from China in the Lao Tzu or the I Ching. And I'll get a little bit more about China here in just a few seconds. But Lao Tzu said, "Do you have the patience to stand in the river of life until the mud settles without stirring it up?" And what he was talking about, in my opinion, these 500,000 years later after he said that, I'm only kidding, I know it was about 5,000 years. Don't send me emails saying I got the date wrong because that's just the way it goes. But what Lao Tzu was insinuating, I think, was that, you know, we're always stirring up the muck and the mire. No wonder things are cloudy all the time. We don't have the patience to sit still and wait and see how things look when they settle out. And that takes time and patience, as he pointed out. And we don't have either of both, I think, these days. So I've asked for some patience during this time. It's been about a month. I think it's about a month and a half since there's been a podcast out of me. And there is good reason for that. I mentioned Lao Tzu just a few seconds ago, the great Chinese philosopher and teacher and master. And about 4 or 5 months ago, I was approached by a gentleman who used to be at one time the president of CBS Radio. His name's Dan Mason. And let me just put a bookmark right there because I have to give you the history of how Dan Mason showed in my life. So just hold that right there. Dan called me 4 or 5 months ago. Let's rewind back to 2009. I was at Oprah Radio, knocking out shows for Dr. Oz and Gene Chatsky and Bob Green, doing my own show on that channel as well, and hanging out with Oprah and all the people that do all those great things back in the day, 11 years ago. And I got a phone call one day. Actually, it wasn't a phone call. A guy come and knocked on my door, and it was one of the higher-ups there who will remain nameless. And I'll leave it at that. And he said, "Hey, how do you know Dan Mason?" And I said, I don't know a Dan Mason. And I first had him confused with the folk singer Dave Mason. "Please come to Boston for the springtime," and all that stuff. I think that's Dave Mason. Anyway, might be Fogelberg. Either way, I thought Dan Mason was Dave Mason, the folk singer. And I begged off. I'm like, I don't know this guy. So he says, "Okay, well, he said he heard you in the car and, you know, da-da-da-da-da, and he thought you're pretty good and, you know, maybe that was it." Well, what he didn't tell me at the time was he was the president of CBS Radio inquiring about my talents and nobody was offering up any information. So 4 years later, in 2013 going into 14, on Facebook, the landfill of Facebook actually coughed up something that was worthwhile, and I get a note from Dan Mason. And he says, "You probably don't remember me, but I called 4 or 5 years ago." I'm like, "You're the folk singer, you know?" And he's going on telling me how he was in the car getting the oil changed, his wife's vehicle. And she was a huge fan of Oprah, had the channel on in her car. On a Saturday morning, he's off to get this oil change. And he gets in and he hears me doing my show on a Saturday. Now, he said I was talking about baseball, which I suppose that's possible. I can't remember, it was a long time ago, a lot of shows ago. But whatever I was talking about stuck in his head. And so he kept it in his hip pocket to some degree. And he was just getting ready to retire from CBS after a very long career there. He's president of the radio. This is a guy who started out as a disc jockey and worked his way to the top chair without ever having to do sales, which is unheard of in the radio business. And he was part of the team that's putting together this podcast platform called Play.it. And so he said, "I'd like you to be part of that." I said, "Let me get this straight. You heard me in your wife's car getting the oil change 5 years ago. Now you're reaching out on Facebook to ask me to do podcasting, which I know zero about. He says, yeah. I said, okay, let's do it. So they sent me a bunch of really cool equipment, and I begged off of that as well. I said, listen, I'm a studio rat. I like to be in the studio. I like the whole visceral feel of the studio, the radio studio, and the buttons and everything that's in front of me. It's like where I need to be. And he says, fine. So for about a year, I did shows out of WBBM here in Chicago, and I used their studio, which was brand new, man. It was so cool. And they had it set up for the Cubs at the time. Then the Cubs games were moved out of there. And they had this brand new studio with nobody using it except Johnny. So it was pretty good. So I cut my teeth really on that CBS Radio Play.it podcast platform. Learned how to do the shows. I would do all, much like I do now, I would do the shows. I would send them to New York. Mostly I did the editing on this end. And they would kind of put it together, put music on it, stuff like that. But I had this rotating group of guests that I still slip in sometimes on these shows. Some of the podcasts that I've done where I've resurrected some of my old shows are from those Play.it days. They probably still technically own the audio, but so what? And so Dan really got me into the podcasting platform. And then we kind of hit and miss over a few years. And so 4 months ago, bringing you all up to speed in less than 6 minutes, that's covering a lot of ground pretty quick. I get an email from Dan saying, hey, could you have time to talk? Sure. So we're going back and forth and catching up. And he said, listen, I got a project that's sitting here on my desk. I've been wrangling my brain over it for months. And I think you're the only guy that can do this. So he's telling me that one of the stations that he owns and is with his partners, New World Radio in Washington, D.C., they have different frequencies. And in radio, you know, you'll have somebody has many frequencies that they can use. And some of those they originate programming on. Some of them are brokered where people pay to have that airtime. And both of the stations that he has brokered time on their frequencies. And one of them is Hispanic religious programming that's not going anywhere anytime soon. It does really well. And the other one for 25 years has been the NPR version of Chinese public radio. It's their version of our NPR, I should say. China Radio International, and that's been on the air for 25 years in Washington, which has a very large, affluent, and dedicated English-speaking Chinese audience, but also a very loyal, interested listenership of the United States. So they've been doing these cultural shows for a very long time, and they emanate from Beijing, China. So apparently at some point in the last 6-8 months, maybe a year, his partners in Beijing said they wanted to try something that's never been done before. They wanted to have a show that was based in America with an American host that would also have a co-host in Beijing, China, to talk about the cultural similarities and dissimilarities between our nations and who we are as people. And he'd been racking his brain to find somebody that would be an American host to do this. It's an international show. There's more than a little bit of pressure here. And it wasn't happening. He had called people. Nobody's going to touch that. So his wife, whose car was getting the oil changed in 2009, Kathy, walks in on one of his conference calls. And when he's done, she says, you got to get a hold of John St. Augustine. He's the only guy that can do this. And that's where it all started. So for the last month and a half or so, I have been nose to the grindstone with this new project called The Bridge. And The Bridge is all about spanning the gap between Beijing, China, and Washington, Chicago, and New York. Actually, the show airs in New York City as well, and online. The technical challenges of this are many and formidable. 6,585 miles apart. It's never been done. It's not on a satellite. There is no such thing to do it that way. Beijing is 13 hours ahead of Chicago. It's already tomorrow night there. So when you start to design programming and set up tape schedules and all the pieces that go with that, it is a daunting task. Then add to it the fact that there's no technology that really readily exists to put us together, to make it sound good. And it was a lot of work. And so some of the best engineers in radio that I've ever worked with, they kind of put their minds together in China and in Washington and knocking this stuff out and figuring this stuff out. And it still wasn't happening. And it wasn't coming around. So at one point, I reached out to a guy that I worked with at Oprah Radio, Scott Clifton. We called him the doctor because he could fix damn near everything. And I got a hold of Doc Clifton, who handles a lot of ESPN stuff. And he said, you got to try this platform. So he gave me the platform and set the thing up. And after, again, some ups and downs and a lot of sweaty palms, the thing worked. Fascinating. And amazing to me that I could be sitting in my studio in Chicago, click on a switch, and my co-host from Beijing, China, Hu Yang, a 30-something brilliant young lady, is there in my ear like we're talking in the same room. From a technical standpoint, I guess on some levels, that's not a big deal. We talk it all around the world all the time. You can text and do things like that. But this is different. This is long-form radio that needs to have some sort of technical basis to it to make it sustainable over 6,585 miles for the long term. So once we figured that out, and we had a launch date of September 1st we were working back from, then we had to put shows together. So as soon as the technology was in place, and it's still a little tenuous, I'm always messing with the sound and the audio pieces and stuff like that, but as soon as that was in place, we could start ramping up. And we didn't start, if I would have had my druthers, it had been 20 shows in the can before we ever, you know, got started on September 1st, and that quite didn't happen. But we did get five in, and now we're eight in, and so I'm breathing a little bit better. So for the last month and a half, this hiatus that I've been on from Life 2.0 podcast is because I've added this international radio show that brings people together closer than they've ever been before, one conversation at a time. And that's, in some ways, always been my mantra in radio. It's what I've been doing since day one. I just, you know, I came out of the chute knowing that I don't care. Listen, call it what it is. Your politics, your political preferences don't end up on your headstone. So kind of who gives a shit at some point? And all the sports talk is fine, but it's just fill and fodder, really. You know, I played sports most of my life. I can't even listen to that stuff. It's just majoring in minor things, details, don't care. So to break through those things is a daunting task because that's what most of radio is. Politics and sports. Tell me there's more to life than that. I think that there is. So this show is devoid of politics, and there's a couple mentions of sports, but only in context. And we're having conversation between us, between our countries, about the similarities that we share, the common ground that we have. And I didn't know what that would be, quite frankly. So about a week or so before this was all starting to ramp up, it was time for a haircut. I mean, I needed a haircut. And even though I had had one about 2 months ago, there's something about getting a haircut for me that's like starting over. Now, look, I don't have a lot of hair, bottom line. And the hair that I do have is more like quills on a porcupine, I think, for the most part. But that's neither here nor there. I need a haircut. And so the guy that I get my haircut from is in Chicago in what we call the old neighborhood. Everybody's got an old neighborhood at this point, hopefully. And I get to go back to the old neighborhood where I grew up, not far from Schurz High School, where I went to school in Chicago. And there's nobody left there. I mean, there may be one or two old neighbors there. I don't stop at anybody's house. But when I sit there and wait at Ray's Barbershop at Keeler and Montrose in the city of Chicago, they're all there in my mind. My mom and dad are still there, and the Beals Bakery is still open right down the street, and Belding Playground is just full of my friends, and we're playing fast pitch behind the school, or pinners out in front of the school, or 16-inch hard softball, or basketball, or football in the middle of winter, or a zillion other memories flood in when I go to the barbershop. It's really why I go. I mean, I could probably go a year without getting a haircut. Nobody would ever notice, but I would. So I go back there in many ways, not to just get a trim, but to also get tuned up, to remember where I came from, why I do what I do, the importance of the things that I learned growing up and how those have served me. And I just need to get out of the fray a little bit and go back in time to a much simpler time, even though there was chaos in the world back then, you know, 67, 68, 69, 70, 70, all those years Vietnam was going on. There was no perfect time in this country. But my view was about six blocks wide. That was it. And when your view is only six blocks wide, you can handle that, even though the world may be going to shit. So I go back there and I just rest. And there's always a wait. There's always a line at Ray's. And that day I went for the haircut, I got there about 11 o'clock. Nobody in the barbershop. I look, is it open? And I walk up to the door and there was nobody in there. I was shocked again. It was like shock one pulling up, shock two is like, what? And then there's Ray, and he's standing there. And I will tell you, I've been going there 10 years, maybe 12, 10, 12 years. All he's ever said to me in 10 to 12 years was hello or good morning and thank you when I paid him. That's it. I don't even hear him talk to people that are in the chair. It's a pretty quiet place. It's not like when I was a kid and get in there going on about all the, you know, headlines and stuff. This guy doesn't say a hell of a lot, but he does a great job on the hair. Everybody, literally people, I drive 25 minutes, 30 minutes just to see him or more. So nobody in the place. I walk in, I look around. He goes, come on in. It's all yours. That's more words than he's said to me in a decade. So I sit in the chair and all I said to him was, did you paint the walls during your break? Because they look different. For the next 30 minutes, I heard his entire life story. He's from Morocco. He came to the States 22 years ago in some sort of a lottery visa type thing. He learned to cut hair when he was 14 and 15 years old during his break from school. He had seven brothers and sisters. And his father said, just like they would here in the States, you're not going to sit around on your ass in the summertime. You're going to get jobs. So he got him hooked up with a local barber who didn't pay him, but he could get tips from the customers. And he said 10, 12, 14 hours a day, he watched this guy cut hair for two, three years. And he learned how to cut hair by watching this guy and getting tips. You talk about an apprenticeship. So when I observe him cutting hair, now I know where it comes from. His movements come from some guy that's been long gone who he watched in Morocco. And then I heard about his first wife and his second wife and all his kids and what kind of car he's got and how he hates people drinking bottled water and what in America that we're so wasteful. And I'm listening to this guy and nobody's walking in the place and I'm fascinated. I'm like, what tripped his trigger today? Was it because there's nobody in here? Is this like the lucky lottery day? I walked across the bridge at the right time. What? And after about 20 minutes, really, I said, can I ask you another question? He says, sure. I said, you going to start cutting my hair today or tomorrow or what? And he laughed and he kept going. And for the rest of the time he took him to cut my hair, he talked more and more about himself that that was shock number three. He charges $12 for a haircut. I always give him 20 bucks. I mean, are you kidding me? 12 bucks? $12 for a haircut? This guy's been cutting hair for 22 years and learned from some master in Morocco? I give him 20 bucks. And he always says, thank you. Well, today, when I gave it to him that day, he said, thank you, my friend. He'd never said friend before. And it's not like we're going to dinner anytime soon, but whatever was going on that day, when I got that haircut and he told me so much about his life, then I kind of a little bit mind back and forth. There was a bridge built there. There was a bridge. Small, may not be real stable. It's not covering a huge expanse, but there was a bridge that was there that day that wasn't there for the last 10 years for whatever reason. And as this thing with China started to ramp up doing this show, this international radio show, I'm having to have conversations with people I've never met in my life. My co-host, Hu Young, is 32. She's highly educated, speaks better English than I ever will, has been educated in the UK, has lived in the States as an exchange student years and years ago, and she is a highly regarded journalist on the radio in China. She's the host of the China Roundtable, and on the weekends, she steps out, and a young woman named Beibei, B-E-I-B-E-I, she fills in on the weekends, so she's the weekend co-host. Beibei was another one who had a terrific career on radio in China for 10 years. She did a solo show and also had some hosts that would sit in with her at times and guests, of course. And then she became a mom and she put all that away. And so they somehow talked her out of retirement. Boy, can she go. I just turned the microphone on to say, how you doing? And she's off to the races. And these are the kind of conversations that are interesting me on very many levels. Number one is there's an age difference here, 30 years between us. I see the world a lot different than she did. I got to tell you, the show that went up today, and you're hearing this on the 4th of September, is called The Four Seasons. And when Hu Young was talking about the four seasons, she meant spring, summer, winter, and fall. And when she said something about the four seasons here in the States, I didn't think of those things. I thought of Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. That's my first. That's in my head first. So she'd never heard of him. Who is this Frankie guy? I'm like, you're killing me here. So there's the 30 year age difference. Then of course there's the gender difference. You know, I'm at this point a stegosaurus in my life, and both Hu Young and Bebe are young women, professional women, very successful women. Bebe's a mom, and they see things from that perspective. So there's some of that going on there. Then of course there's this cultural difference. They drink a lot of hot water in China. I'm not exactly sure why that is. There's health reasons behind it, and they keep telling me they're going to let me know why. I can't imagine drinking hot water all day. You know, but that's just me. I need a cold Coca-Cola, you know, on ice. And Hu Young at one point said, I can't imagine putting those glass shards in my body, meaning ice cubes. So you got those three things going. But then there's the similarities. You know, both these women have great senses of humor. I am not the easiest person to get along with, especially on the radio. And I realize, because I've been doing shows so long by myself, that I can be a bulldozer at times. I mean, this is just the way I've been. I've made my name in radio doing solo shows for the most part over 20 years on many different radio stations, whether it was three people listening or 3 million, it was all the same. So we are finding our balance together. We're finding the common ground together. And it's just a pleasure to work with both of them. And again, you can catch that. The podcast is probably the easiest way for you to do it, which is at WCRW1190.com. Good stuff over there, kind of like what we're doing here. So I hope you check that out. So I've had to, and I expect some, but I've had to kind of move some garbage out of the way first, full well knowing that the relationship the United States has with China right now isn't really very good. And I'm not going to get into my thoughts on why I think that is, because I don't have time for that bullshit. But here's what I'm saying. Ever since I got onto the radio, my job has always been to bring people together, not push them apart. And it's a difficult task to bring people together with some sort of intent and some sort of purpose, because most of talk radio is about dividing people further and further apart. And the reason for that is twofold. One is they make money on it. And the second reason is they make money on it. The more you slice and dice and divide people into groups, and you get those groups clearly defined for advertisers, you can sell the shit out of it for a very long time. So over the years, I've not fit in a lot of places because I won't be divisive. I'm not going to sit here and say even things that I think personally. It's not my place for that. My job has always been, and the responsibility to this microphone has always been, as Mr. Rogers said, he used television, I kind of adapted it to radio, that the space between this microphone and your ears is sacred to me, and I have to treat it as such. And that there's something that goes along with that respect. And anything outside of that, I don't want anything to do with. There's enough of that shit out there. There's more. You can go down the dial and hear 1,000 different shows that are all sound the same. All inauthentic, if you ask me. It's all by talk radio hosts who know everything about everything, but haven't done much of anything. And the problem with that is people listen to them because it feeds their bias and they think they've done something. So it's a false power. It's a false narrative, in my opinion. And so I've never gotten on the radio once and ever talked about things I was not connected to. You know, veterans issues and the environment and you know, relationships between people and my own struggles. Those are real things. But authenticity doesn't sell. It doesn't sell. What sells is sensationalism. And the false narratives and all the things like that seem to take the headlines. So this show, The Bridge, that airs in New York City and Washington, D.C. and all around the world at different places, is not about headlines. It's about lifelines. That's the deal. See, I have friends, maybe you do too, that are black, red, yellow, white. I got a couple people who have green. I think they're green. I'm not really sure what planet they came from. But they all teach me something. They all lend something to my life. And I watch how they live their lives, and I'm able to extract lessons from that and apply it to myself, because they're just human beings. And I think a lot of this comes from my time playing football. I really do. If you've never been part of a team sport for an extended, I'm not talking about a pickup game on a Saturday, which isn't bad, but if you've never been part of a team sport at a certain level over many seasons, then this may not ring true with you. That's why I don't criticize football players, baseball players, basketball players, or hockey players, any other players that are in a team sport because I played it. I know how difficult it is to win. I know that losing is far more frequent than winning is. And that's everybody wants to be the top and it's not possible. And so you have to accept to learn how to lose. And not even gracefully, but just lose in general. And being on a team sport like football for so long, you, at least I did, come to realize that everybody has a position to play. Not everybody's going to be a star. The guys that I played next to, I played defensive end and linebacker at times and tight end. You know, we were the grunts to some degree. Not a huge glory position all the times, but we had to do our jobs. And if you don't do your job and work with the person next to you, the quarterback usually gets his ass beat. Now, that's not a bad thing when I was on defense. It's what I lived for. But that's a whole other show that I'll do at another time. The deal is this. I played with guys that were black, Hispanic, Native American, rich, poor, everything you can imagine. Divorced family, great parents, across the board. Everybody had something going on. And back in high school, of course, this wasn't very prevalent, but any religious or political things didn't matter. I mean, it's just nobody got on the line and said, okay, all the Catholics kind of go over here. All the Protestants go off to this way. Any Muslims here, you guys go over there. Everybody worked together. I think nobody cared. I'm sure the coaches didn't care as long as you did your job. And that was the same thing in college. I never went to a meeting or a chalk talk where we were going to learn how about, you know, our plays for the week or what kind of defense we're going to run. And everybody said, okay, so, you know, how much did you make this week? Or, you know, what are your parents' beliefs? Or how did you vote last? Nobody cared. Do your job. Do your job. And then that carried over when I was in the Coast Guard. Same thing, just a bigger team. When we were at Coast Guard Air Station Chicago and the SAR alarm went off, search and rescue alarm, that somebody was in trouble, then we all did our job. And it didn't matter how the chief voted or what color he was or she was. And so these divisions that live outside of those sort of movements, they don't have any meaning to me. So I watch this division and these things get sliced and diced and pushed aside, and it's a waste of time. So that's why I don't do those things on this show, because it's a waste of time and I don't have any time to waste. I keep counting on my human countdown calendar, the human math equation that, you know, if you're lucky and you hit 77 and a half years, 78 years, you get about 27,380 some odd days to be alive. And then you take that and subtract that possible number that you could be alive in forever. And then you take how many days you've already used and deduct the two. I'm about 6,200 days to go. You think I'm going to dick around with this stuff? No, I'm not. So there are days, I'm not Zen-like. There are days when my back really gets up about things that I see in the news and how people treat each other and the utter chaos that we create. That's for sure. But I always check myself and say, what am I going to do about it? Because it's the response, really, is where all this matters. It is the response. It's not the event. We can't control the events for the most part. I can't control how other people are going to act, but I damn sure well can control how I respond, which is different than react. Most people at this point are just reacting. Somebody says something, bam, bam, bam. Take a breath. Stop, drop, and roll. Get out of that and think about how you'll respond to things, if at all. Some responses are no response, which are also very powerful. So what I've decided to do in the face of criticism that I've already had some, and I'm sure there's more to come, is to do a cultural exchange show with my friend Hu Young in China. That's how I'm using my 6,200 days. I'm going to do something about that to build that bridge a little stronger than it is now, because that other bullshit comes and goes. Do you remember when the Soviets were the evil empire on the planet? Remember when it was Iran and Iraq? Remember it was Japan. They dropped bombs on Pearl Harbor. Now we go there on vacation. So history is full of lessons like that, and it's all about perspective. So that's why I don't get into the headlines saying that the virus was caused here or there. That's all bullshit. All of it's bullshit. It is. Don't major in minor things, I remind myself. And so a major thing for me to do is become the host of this show and then have these rotating co-hosts in China. And we launched on September 1st. And it's a thing. It's a thing. And these shows actually get rolled into podcasts. And I know you can find those podcasts because the first four are up at WCRW1190.com. That's www. Write this down. I'm not going to say it more than four or five times. You can find the podcast versions, if you're not living in New York or Washington, of the Bridge podcast. You can find that at www.wcrw1190.com. One more time, wcrw1190.com, 1190.com. And the conversations there, some of those guests you've probably already heard here, and that's the whole idea, is to keep expanding that out. So Bill Curtis is there, and Hillary Ramo is there, and Jennifer Weigel is there. And if you've enjoyed shows with them, you're going to love it because they bring a bigger perspective. They're talking on an international platform. So these things matter to me, and it's to me an investment. It's an investment in myself and the talent that I've had and the ability I've been given for 23 years in this business. And when an opportunity like this walks right in my front door, the last thing I was going to say is, I don't think this is a good time. Here's what I know, and it goes right back to my time playing football. When the game was the most difficult, toughest, the weather sucked, when we're down by 10 and all seemed against us, that's when you garner yourself more than ever. It's easy when it's easy. And so while this may fly in the face of some who say, "Oh, you can't be talking to those people, they're fill in the blank," I'm like, what are you doing to make the world a little bit better place besides nothing? This is what I'm doing. And I will continue to do this and talk with people of other languages and other lands, because we all share the same planet. There are no sides on a globe. It's just round. One of my favorite things when I fly is to look down from 30,000 feet, 30,000 feet, and see that, you know, there are boundaries. They're all man-made for the most part. You see the roads and you can see where the fields are at and stuff, but it all looks so much the same. And you realize when you get up that high that all the problems are down there. When you're flying in this tube at 500 miles an hour, which is a miracle in itself, you look down and you go, it's all down there. Not quite like what the astronauts were able to witness from space, but close to it. When you realize from a perspective standpoint, it's all down there. Or if you're on a plane, everybody's sitting next to each other. Nobody knows how you voted, or you just want to get where you're going. Nobody cares. So to roll that stuff over to what I was talking about with the bridge, the best way that I know to help build these type of bridges is to make sure they're standing in the most difficult of times. And if I'm the guy that gets a chance to do it, then that's what I'm going to do. It's the best use of my time. And the last thing I want to bring up is a total first world problem. I am amazed at how cell phones have totally, in so many ways, taken over our lives. And I've talked about this, I think, before on this show. I go to the gym 3-4 days a week. I don't push the weights like I used to, but I'm adamant getting in there. I'm disciplined getting in there to kind of push off, you know, the inevitable the best that I can. I you know, nobody's going to call me to play football anymore, but I still got to push those weights in my mind like I have since I was 14 and 15 to kind of maintain myself a little bit, keep the machine going. And I go to the gym this morning, and I took 3 or 4 days off. It's good for me to rest even longer between. I don't do the every other day thing anymore. But anyway, I go in there, and there's 6 people in there. 5 of them are looking at their cell phones while they're working out. And I'm like, it was just like this weird, you know, science fiction theater scene, something out of the Twilight Zone. Did you go to the gym and was everybody on a cell phone but you? I'm like, what's wrong with me? Maybe I should go to the car, get my cell phone out, get some earbuds and walk around and scroll. And I'm thinking, I'm in there for 25 minutes. I don't know how long these other people have been in. I've been in and out and finished my workout while they're still scrolling on their phones. And I find it so fascinating and maybe debilitating at the same time that technology, in some ways, as Bucky Fuller said, has surpassed our humanity, that we're so tethered to this electronic stuff that we forgot to look at each other or connect with each other. Now, again, it's the COVID. You're not running around, you know, slapping each other in the back of the gym. But the point is, it was just astounding. And I would do like 4 sets of lat pull downs, for example. And the guy in front of me has got his gloves on. He's got all his gear on. He's looking in the mirror at himself. But he hasn't done anything except scroll. His thumb looks good because he's scrolling with that thumb. But that's it. And then I look across the board and I think about how this happens to us. They say it takes 21 days for a habit to form. And kids nowadays, I sound like a geezer, but so what? I'm a geezer. Kids nowadays, you know, they're doing this technical stuff when they're 4, 5, 6 years old. Their life's already set. And I wonder, how do you deal with the reality of life if you have to disconnect from the tether at some point? Unless you're paid to sit in front of a computer all day, what about real life? What's so important on the phone that it supersedes your workout? Yeah, I go into the gym for 3 hours. Well, how long do you actually work out? About 9 minutes. The rest of the time, I'm checking my phone. I find it fascinating. Now, look, I'm just complaining. That's it. A little bit of air coming out a small hole in the side of my head going, I can't really believe this. And again, the way I grew up, the way I've worked out my whole life in the basement of the YMCA where the Bears used to train, or, you know, at college or whatever, you go into the weight room and you lift weights. You know, a little smacking around and laughing and a couple jokes here and there, but you were in there for business. And I just see this, just a different energy. And as I'm walking out the door, the woman's like, well, that was really quick. I said, I do more in 30 minutes than most people do in 3 hours. I said, I don't mean to sound like a total ass, but really? She shakes her head. She goes, I know, I get it. So when I look at how much technology has, in some ways, pushed us even further apart, the human connection, I think, is even more important now than it's ever been. Granted, as it just pops into my head, I'm using technology to talk with you wherever you're at in the world, from South Africa to Canada to Australia, Chicago, New York, Detroit, everybody listening in those places that send me emails. I'm using this technology to reach out to say, let's not use the technology so much. Don't forget that we're humans and that our time here is limited and that building bridges between people is really important. You can build bridges or you can dig ditches. You can't do both at the same time. I'll keep you posted. Again, you can listen to the Bridge podcast that I do with Hu Young. It's actually a 7-day-a-week show, so I'm a pretty busy guy these days, but I will also make sure I find time to get these podcasts in. They're very important. I get to say shit here all I want. Shit, 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 shit. Can't do that on the Bridge. It's not allowed. You can find the Bridge at WCRW 1190 AM. Or if you're listening online, it's WCRW1190.com. Until next time, keep your inner light shining. You never know how far it will go or who will need it. Safe travels and adios.